Oh, that's right. Good afternoon, everybody. Hey, I'm Ann Eller, and I'm right here at Sharp Facets Gallery. It's time for Meet Me at the Diner. And this afternoon, my very special guest is Donna Washington. She is a storyteller, an actress, an author who appears at schools, libraries, and conferences nationwide. She's written and performed 4 one-woman shows about historical black heroines and adapted folk tales for the stage. She narrates picture books. She's a very busy woman, and needless to say, she loves to talk. So that's what we're going to do this afternoon. We are going to talk. She is here with the Greenwood County Library. She's here with the boy who harnessed the wind. She's been traveling to our schools out there talking to students, telling stories. And she will be tomorrow over there in Ware Shoals at the high school. And there's going to be a public performance, I understand, Donna, at 10 o'clock, where you want everybody to come out and see you.
Oh, yeah. Come out and share some stories with us. It'll be great.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, I was reading your bio and reading your background here. You were an Army brat, and you admit it in your bio.
I'm very proud to be an Army brat, I have to say.
Okay, because?
I love traveling. Yeah. And 3 of my siblings were adopted when we were in South Korea. They're half black, half Korean, Amerasian.
Right.
It's made for an amazing life of traveling and meeting people, encountering cultures all over the world, and learning to appreciate and respect a lot of different kinds of people who have a lot of different kinds of ways of looking at the world.
You know, that's very interesting, because I also understand that your dad was a big storyteller, shall we say. In fact, I understand he made things so real you didn't know that it was thousands of years ago.
Well, we did know it was thousands of years ago. We just thought he'd been there. So when I was a kid, I was in between kindergarten and about 2nd grade. My father is also a historian. He would sit at the head of the table, you know, all the kids sitting around, and he would tell us Greek mythology and Arthurian legend and Roman mythology in first person.
Oh, you would think that would be boring.
Oh, it'd be great. It was great. And he'd throw my mother in there, right, so that we would know that it really happened. And so, you know, I was in kindergarten when I learned the riddle of the Sphinx, like what walks on 4 legs in the morning and 2 legs in the afternoon and 3 legs in the evening. And my father said he was there, and he said Oedipus was kind of an idiot, and so he helped him solve the riddle. So we thought my dad...
He had a good ego.
Hey, he still does. So we thought my father was thousands of years old, and I didn't find out until much later, when I was in 8 or 9 years old, that he really could not have been there. It was devastating. I remember thinking, he's not that old? I mean, it was something else, right?
That's pretty cool. That is pretty cool. But through that, you had a great appreciation of stories, I guess.
Yes, all of us did. And because we were a traveling circus, you know, there's 7 of us, we would get to a new place, and we always had friends of our, you know, within the family. But we would do things like on Sunday mornings, we would make breakfast for my parents, and then we'd come in and we would do a skit that we had put together, and they would get breakfast and a show.
Wow, that was pretty special.
Well, you know, it's just what you did, right?
Right.
Our family was just like that.
That's pretty amazing, you know. And then if you fast forward to kids today, do you still think we have that type of relationship going where kids are doing that type of thing? Or are we in fear? Actually, I have fear that we're losing those social skills, those fun things to do.
Well, I think that you're going to have some kids who keep hold of it. I know my kids did. My kids, when they were little, they used to set up the playroom like it was a safari, and they would invite us up, and we would watch them do a television show or watch them go and hunt creatures. But they did photo safaris, and inevitably my son was chased up a tree, and he'd have to radio for my daughter to come get him. But, you know, they were like, you know, 7 and 4 when they were doing stuff like
sure.
this. So I think that they do, but I think what we risk is that kids have learned to shortcut the language and say very specific things with very short amounts of language, which is great if you've got your thumbs talking to each other.
Right.
But when you're actually trying to have a conversation, it's a little more tricky. And so you have kids who don't know how to express themselves. And one of my favorite examples of this, I was at a conference, and I was talking about how children are having trouble connecting with long-form language. And I had a professor who said, and she gave me permission to do this, she said, she asked a kid something once, and they went, yeah, uh-huh. Right, really, yeah, right. And that was their sentence. There's no noun. There's, there's nothing in there.
Right.
But she, and all the other kids around were nodding like she'd said something.
Right.
And she said, wait a minute, that didn't even make any sense. And then she actually worked her way through a sentence, and all the other kids had understood what she said, but well, at least they thought they did. Some of them, well, I didn't realize you meant that. So as soon as the language was fuller, there was more discussion. But it was just, it's worrisome. And I think that you see that more and more. You have kids who have a hard time talking to each other.
That's right. And I mean, when you see a whole table out to eat, mm-hmm. and everybody has their device, in fact, some of them are texting each other at the table. Yeah. They're not even looking at each other and saying, they text.
Well, you know, I have to say, I have a good friend named Jen Berenbach who works with families, and she said, would you have had the same response if they'd all had books and they were reading? I said, no, because if they were reading books, they would be reading whole sentences, and they would be like using their imaginations, and they'd be creating. I could live with that, but I can't live with the, like, you know, LOL and all that. I can't live with that.
Well, you know, what do you think is going to happen to our language, though, Donna, as it becomes LOL? Everybody says, oh, yeah, LOL.
But no one's laughing. No one's on the floor. They're just sitting there going LOL, right? Yeah. Doesn't mean anything. I think that we're going to come to a point where you find that it's hard to express things. If you don't learn how to do that, it just becomes very frustrating. And I'm really curious to see how this generation deals with relationships. Right? Because we know so much of relationships is working with another person and meeting them halfway and figuring out what's going on. It's really hard.
Exactly.
I mean, you can send someone a sad emoji, but that's not necessarily what's going on, right?
And what does a sad emoji really mean? I'm sad. Okay.
Okay. What does that mean? Are you sad like you're going to like throw my stuff out the window? Or are you sad like you need a moment? What does that mean? Right?
Exactly. Yes, yeah, so I think it is scary territory that we're going to. And as a storyteller, you're in a unique place to see what is happening with our young people. How do they respond? And do certain age groups maybe respond better because they're still younger? Or what do you see?
You know, what's kind of fascinating about storytelling is people think about it for children, right? It's, oh, it's something for little children. And then I say, oh, I work with middle schools and high schools. And they go, how could you do that? What? Because they don't want stories. I said, are you kidding me? They are glued to you because they are incredibly hungry for stories. Somewhere along the line, we stop talking to them, possibly because they get really flip or whatever, and we start talking to them and we start talking, you know, we stop talking with them and we start talking at them, right?
Right.
Look at me. Don't do that. Put that down. You can't go there.
Right.
But in terms of really like communicating with them, they don't want to talk to us. They don't understand us, and we're just sick of their behavior.
We don't understand
right. Right. We're sick of the behavior. But when you get into a situation where you're sharing stories with them, they will sit and listen to you for hours. Hours. Little kids are fine too. They're still in that place where they're in partnership with you. What we don't realize is how hungry they are for stories. And so I go into a middle school, and I remember it back in the day when I first started, before, you know, anyone was really sure how this was going to work. I'd show up at a high school, and the principal would look me up and down and say, where is your stuff? Because, you know, most things, they come in, they have drums and music and props
right.
and studio. I got nothing. I come in by myself, and I ask for a microphone. And for the longest time, they'd say to me, they will not sit and listen. And after it's over, the next question is, how did you do that? Because they were silent or they participated, they were appropriate. How did you manage that? And the answer is, it's stories. They want to look into your eyes and they want to let know that you're focusing on them and that you're trying to reach them. And if you do that with audiences, they will come and they'll sit and they will play with you. But you have to have the confidence to do that. And so I've been in middle schools, and at one point we had, I don't know what, 1,000 kids, it feels like. That probably wasn't that many, maybe
right.
600 of them in a room. And we're all telling, and they just come from an assembly, and they were wide open, and we were telling together, and the teacher's like, how did you? And the answer is stories. It funnels that energy, and they want to hear them. One of the big things that's sweeping the country now is the moth. You heard of this?
Mm-mm.
Where It's really big in New York and big in the cities where you come in and you have people get up and they have 5 minutes to tell a story about something, like the color purple or blue. And you've got people paying money to sit in an audience and watch random people get up and tell random stories.
No, I haven't heard about this. Sounds great.
It's called The Moth.
The Moth, okay.
And it's story slams. And young people are paying and they are hungry for this. So it's not that I have some newfangled-y, it's that human beings are built to look at each other and talk to each other. We were not built to stare at screens. And so even when we don't have enough of it and we're hungry for it. And kids, seniors in high school, juniors, freshmen, middle school students, they're still hungry for it. The public is hungry for it.
Absolutely. So, you know, one of my favorite movies is Beyond the Thunderdome. Where he finds
Mad Max,
mm-hmm. yes, and he finds that group of kids that are over the bank,
mm-hmm.
and they are telling each other stories because it's so important, because they didn't have the written word.
Right.
All they had was the tell, and you had to do the tell.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think about that whenever I get the opportunity to talk to a storyteller because it's like, you know, it's repeating history or mm-hmm. coming up with a new story, but it is part of our culture.
Right. And part of how we dealt with things. I'm reading this great book right now called Story Proof by a man named Kendall Haven, and he calls us Homo narratus, the animal who speaks.
Wow, that's cool.
Isn't that cool?
That is cool.
And he said, if you think about it, we have been reading as a society of creatures en masse for about 300 years, maybe.
Right.
We have been writing for about maybe 6,000 years.
Okay.
We have been speaking for over 100,000 years. We are created to speak, to, like I said, to make eye contact, to share like that. All this other stuff is new. And so when we have the most impact, it's when we are presenting things like that.
Well, you just take it back to a mom or a dad talking to their baby.
Right.
You know, and the response that you get that connection with mm-hmm. your baby.
Well, you can get it with your 16-year-old. But here's something that I tell parents, because I do this workshop called The Family Affair, where I have them come in and I tell some stories, and then the adults say, well, of course they're looking at you like that. You know, you've got monkey noises going on and all kinds of crazy stuff. Of course they're looking. My kid will never look at me. And I was like, give it a shot. And so you put them in small groups, and the parents start telling stories, and the kids are just hanging on every word. And they don't know what to do. They're like, they never look at me like that. Tell them more stories. But you also think about the fact that when they're little and they're like talking to you,
right?
Think about how we deal with that. The phone rings. Do we leave the phone on the hook and continue to talk to our kid? Or do we answer our cell phone right away?
Oh, absolutely.
Basically, what are we saying to the kid? What you have to say is less important than what's coming out of this box. The kid's washing, you're washing the dishes, the kid's talking to you, They know you're not paying any attention to them. And then, so you haven't really paid any attention to them. They get to be 12 or 13, they do something crazy, you're talking to them. They're looking off in the corner, they got their phone out, and you say, look at me when I'm talking to you. And you have not bothered to model this behavior at any point
that's
in their childhood.
Exactly. Exactly. And if they had the had the kahunas to say it, well, you never looked at me.
Right. And who's going to say that? Because then, you know, then you're like one step in trouble, right?
Right, exactly.
So we are a distracted creature at the moment.
Yeah.
And our children need us. And if you take the time to actually look at them and talk to them from the time they're very little, when they get to be 16 and you do need to talk to them, they will listen to you because they will have learned that that's how you deal with people.
Sure.
But as adults, we are just as bad as our kids, and most of us don't even realize it.
I think you're right. I think you're very right. Hey, I'm here with Donna Washington. She is a storyteller extraordinaire. She's done a lot of things. We're going to be talking about some of these things. Why don't you stay right here with us on WCRS? We'll be right back. Don't you go away.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG, that's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Ah, that's right. We're right back here. Sharp Facets Gallery. A fascinating interview this afternoon with Donna Washington. Talking about one of the things that I rail about is what is going to happen to the spoken word, the written word. You write books, too.
Yes, I do.
How did you get into all this? I know you went to Northwestern.
Mm-hmm.
What were you majoring in when you went to Northwestern?
Well, originally I was going to go pre-law, but I was there for about 2 weeks and changed my major to theater and didn't tell my parents. And they found out
they
at Christmas.
Pleased.
Well,
yeah,
you know, they found out at Christmas, and my parents' attitude has always been, if you really love it and you're willing to work at it, then do it. So I was studying theater, and I got into storytelling because of theater. And then, strangely enough, I'd been out of school for a hot handful of minutes, and I lucked into a contract with a company that had me doing wordless picture books.
Mm-hmm.
So I would narrate the book, and then, of course, you hear, bing, and you turn the page. And so then I went out.
Did you do the bing?
I did not do the bings. The bings are artificial.
Okay.
But you know what I'm talking about, right?
You could have.
They'd asked. I'd have done it. So they sent me out to California to be at this conference. And so I'm doing my shtick at this conference on the stage. And as I leave, this woman says to me, do you write books? And I was like, no, I don't write books. And she said, you should. And she handed me her card. And I'd been a professional for like 20 whole minutes. And I handed her my card. And then I lost her card because, you know, I was with a whole lot of places. I find it months later. I call her on the phone. And I was like, were you serious about me writing a book? And she said, I was just thinking about you. And I'm like, yeah, right. And so she said, I would like you to write something for us. And I'm looking at this card. I can't really place the name of this book company. I'm just like, well, what kind of books do you write? Because I figure, what if she publishes out of her basement or something?
Right.
She said, let me send you some books. And I'm like, she must publish out of her basement. Who would
send
me
you
books? And so the next day, a courier arrives from New York. Now, I live in Chicago at the time. I open the box. The first book on the top of the stack is Where the Wild Things Are. It's HarperCollins children's books.
Wow.
And I'm just like, oh, my God, I'm such an idiot. The next one, Where the Light Is, where, Lights in the Attic, Michelle Silverstein, right? So I go run to the phone. I'm so sorry. So she said, now let's talk. And I was like, no problem, let's talk. So for a number of years, I put out some stuff with HarperCollins. And I've also worked with the Disney Publishing Company, that no longer puts out books,
mm-hmm.
the Jump at the Sun label. And currently I have a book coming out with Peachtree Press called Boo Stew.
Mm-hmm.
These are all children's books, and it's due out in a couple of years.
Wow.
So, you know, you write them, you send them out, and you wait, you know, sit back and wait and see what happens.
You know, that's very interesting, but that, you know, that's a pretty big leap of faith just to say, okay, I'll write a book. I mean, maybe the legal aspect of it made it a little easier to do it, but, you know.
Well, you know, I have to tell you, the first book I ever wrote was called A Pride of African Tales,
mm-hmm.
but it took 12 years for that book to come out because it's a compilation.
How old are you?
12.
12,
no,
okay.
It's a compilation.
Right.
So I had to do a whole lot of stories. I had to find them, and then they had to, like, fit together, and then when I started writing it, it was conceived of as a book for older children,
right.
And there were just going to be a few pictures, and it was going to be like a beautiful coffee table book, and then James Ransom, who's more famous than I, got hold of the book, and he wanted his children to like the book, and what do they like? Pictures. He started doing pictures, so it went from this, like, you know, a book where you, like, turn a few pages, there's a few beautiful illustrations, to a fully illustrated coffee table book.
Right.
So there were too many words, and he was way more famous than I.
Right.
Consequently, I had to do some more editing.
Yes, I see.
So I went back into this book, I'd written it like 8 years earlier. I'm back in the editing room now, slashing words out of it. I mean, it was, by the time it was over, I hated it. Anyway, 12 years, it finally came out. It's gorgeous. It's a lovely book. Before it came out, two books I wrote before it came out before that one did. Because they had normal processes of like 3 to 5 years.
Right.
So it just depends. And you have to... I've always been a writer. I've always someone who's sort of enjoyed it. And if you find the material you want and you have a good editor, I want to say it's not hard, but I guess I should say it's something that I do.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if they'd asked for a math book, they'd have been out of luck.
Okay.
You know, I can't write a math book. I can't write one of those. But I could do stories.
Stories.
Since they have been part of my life since I was very little.
Do you find it, though, difficult because when you tell a story, it's a little different than the written word?
Right. Now, that's something that's very true. And it's something I struggle with as a picture book writer because so many picture books you pick up and you read them out loud, and they're not really good out loud.
Right.
You know, you can read them to yourself and they're fine, but out loud they don't flow off the tongue. So I attempt to write in something called true voice, which means if you pick it up and open it, you can read it straight off the page and it sounds exactly like you're speaking.
Oh,
and that'll get you in trouble.
Okay, because
it's not as literary, you know, it's not as big a literary thing, and it's weird for critics. They don't like it. So that brings up that blog post that I wrote recently.
Right.
The Big Spooky House, or A Big Spooky House, was one of the first really out loud books that I wrote. And it's really meant to be told with another person, and you're meant to play with the voices and the sounds. It's not a book that you sit down and just read cover to cover all by yourself. It's not for that. But when someone is criticizing that book, that's what they do with it. And so the first round of reviews for this book were terrible. They're like, we don't get this. We don't understand what you're doing. Who would read this book? Blah.
That's right. Hey, I tell you what. You know what? We're going to come back. We're going to talk about that. It's her last blog post, or one of her last ones, is Don't Fear the Ugly Baby, Facing Criticism of Your Work. I want to talk some about that because there's a good lesson in that for all of us about what we do and how we approach life. So you keep it right here on WCRS. My very special guest, Donna Washington, a storyteller, actress, author. She does it all, and she is quite flamboyant with the hands here on the show here today. Wish you could see it. Hey, we'll be right back. Don't you go away.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. How you doing this afternoon? Hope you're enjoying our fascinating conversation here with Donna Washington. I know I'm enjoying it. She was just telling me, people say that she just tells stories to kids and is a kid's storyteller and storybook writer. And she goes, you know, Anne, I tell stories for adults, too. So I asked her, are they S-E-X? And she goes, well, sort of, but not really. They're about relationships. I'd like to see one of your shows there, Donna Washington. Yeah, I bet it's fun.
They are a lot of fun. And I have fun doing them.
You know, I think when you can find something that you get to do and it is fun and exciting, I feel very blessed every day that I'm on the radio talking to people that I never would have gotten to talk to if I wasn't in this job. Mm-hmm. I think how lucky I am. I'm sure you think you're pretty lucky to be able to do what you're doing.
Yeah, there are times when I'm on stage and the audience and I are just rolling back and forth and all I can think is, somebody's paying me for this.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought? What a great job.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was talking to Tracy Oates, has been driving me around, and she asked me, so how was last night? And I was like, well, I got back to my hotel room, and I'm in the middle of editing a book, and so I'm writing and writing and writing, and then at some point you just have to stop.
Right.
And I think of that, I think it's Noel Coward, or it could be Oscar Wilde, maybe it's Oscar Wilde. He said, spent all morning, put a comma in, thought about it all afternoon, took it out. So I'm at that point sometimes where I'm sitting there, I'm reading it, I'm readjusting the punctuation, but I'm not really doing any writing. I'm just trying to make myself crazy with literature.
Right.
So, but it's fun. I love it. I wouldn't do anything else.
Well, that's neat that you were able to find that in what you do. Now, A Big Spooky House, of course, is one that had a little question whether it was going to be a success. You were very proud because this came at a time when you didn't you hadn't been writing.
Yeah. No, I in 1996 I had my first child, my son Devin, and I was a really sick pregnant lady. I was not a good pregnant lady. I had hyperemesis, you know, you throw up every 20 minutes for 9 months. And then after the
thanks
kid,
for sharing.
No problem anytime.
Okay.
If anyone out there thinking about it, if you're not married and at least 30, don't go there.
Okay.
So, I had my first kid, and then I had another one about 3 years later, and there wasn't a lot going on outside. I was home. I was taking care of children, and so the book came out, and I was like, yay, look, there is a part of my life that's still out there in the world. And like I said, it got panned. Critics were like, what is this? And I was just miserably depressed. And the way I describe it is if someone walks up to you, you know, because you put your heart and soul into this project, someone walks up to you and says, oh my God, that's a very ugly baby. And then, you know, you're walking around and you didn't think your baby was ugly, but someone else thinks your baby is ugly. And so I had a couple of weeks where I was just really depressed about this. And then I just stopped reading. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't go online. I couldn't see them anymore. And about a year later, really, 6 months to a year, I started seeing a whole different group of critiques come out. And they were from parents and kids and librarians, people who were sharing this book, and they loved it. And kids were learning it and telling it. And it actually started showing up in storytelling competitions with kids because it's an easy book to learn and share. And I thought, that's who I wrote it for. I didn't write it for the guy who's sitting in his office thumbing through it trying to figure out what to do. Even though he gets the first word, I didn't write it for him. And so when I talk about ugly baby moments, I'm talking about those moments where somebody comes at you and says something that just stops you dead. And it can make you question everything you're doing. It can make you question the choices that you've made. And I try to remember that just because that person didn't like what I did doesn't mean nobody will like it. Just because that person said no thank you doesn't mean nobody will want it. And that you have to take whatever your failures are and you have to just pick it up and you have to go. And just because someone else thinks it's an ugly baby, you might think it's beautiful, and it might very well be.
And there might be somebody out there that thinks it's beautiful,
that's
too.
That's right. Yes. So to take those experiences and kind of learn from them. And The Big Spooky House is one of the most popular books that I have written. And kids request that book. And libraries would like to get hands on it.
But it's out of print,
isn't
it? And
it's out of print. And the reason why it's out of print is because the person who bought it at the book company left to go to another book company. So those we call those orphaned books.
Yes.
They have no editor. And so when they were reconfiguring the book company, a lot of book companies buy other companies.
Right.
They were looking at the orphans, and they just cut a whole bunch of them. And there was no one in there going, this book is selling really well. So we got the word it was out of print because someone else couldn't get one. So we called the book company, and we're like, oh, yeah, I guess it didn't sell very well. Please just send us all the extra copies. And they found out it was sold out. They'd sold the entire run.
Okay.
And they weren't going to print anymore. You can't get them.
Wow.
So it was devastating. Like, just as it was taken off, it was gone.
Gone. Wow. Well, some good lessons in that, right?
Yes. You keep going. Don't let them stop you. Don't let yourself stop you. Because, you know.
Well, that's who usually stops
you. Right. It's not
yourself.
Them.
Right.
They'll say what they're going to say, but you are the person who gets to decide whether you go forward or not. You know, don't let being afraid of the ugly baby stop you from trying something else.
That's right, because that ugly baby might turn out to be a princess.
Right, and lovely.
Or a prince.
Or whatever, right.
That's right, exactly.
Pick it up and go. And it's your ugly baby, so there you have it.
Yeah, you got a hauling around, honey.
Hey.
So there's no opportunity for it to be able to be republished or anything?
Well, we bought the rights to it.
Right.
But it was done in an age where they put it on those big glass plates. I mean, it's not digitalized. So we would have to get the plates digitalized and have it reprinted. And we could do that. But we haven't done it yet.
So it might be on a bucket list project. Yeah,
well, you know, I figure, you know, after I make my first cool million, we'll experiment with that.
That
right?
One. Okay.
So it will come back, but probably not for a few years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, when we talk about what you do, your storytelling and everything, how do you come up with your stories?
They come from a lot of different sources. Some of them I write myself. But when I'm working with kids in schools, I like to use stories that they can find in the library.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to source them in a place they can go find them. I tell stories that I get from kids. Like, they'll come up and go, oh, I've got a story for you. And they'll tell me stories. And some of them are fabulous, and they end up in my repertoire. Sometimes grown-ups do this. One of my absolute favorite stories, I was at Lafayette, Georgia.
Okay.
Not Lafayette, Georgia. Lafayette.
Right.
And I was on the radio, actually, the night before I went, and I told this the ghost with the one black eye. I got, you know, hijacked. Someone's like, oh, tell a story. You got 2 minutes. Go. And so, wait a minute. So I came up with a story that I never tell, but I knew I could do it in 2 minutes. So the next day I get to the library, there's like 150 kids there. They all want to hear that story again. And then, of course, they come up afterwards, and they all touch you, and then you're Typhoid Mary.
Right.
Sitting maybe 5 feet from me the entire time I'm telling to 150 screaming children and their parents is this older man just sitting there, gentleman sitting there. And I was like, he's got to be in his 70s, maybe a little older. He must come to the library and sit there.
Right.
And that's what he does every day. And he does not care that there are 150 screaming children in here.
Right.
So the show is over. The kids all leave. He leans over. He says, "Can I tell you a story?"
And I'll bet you're going, sure.
Sure, go for it. His name is Elvis, and he told me the most wonderful stories. And at the end of this interview, I'm going to tell you one of those, one of Elvis's stories. So you get them from all over the place. One of them, one of the really creepy stories, you know, my son wrote it when he was 10 years old on the way home from church.
How about that?
Yep.
The experience of church influenced this child?
It is a really creepy, creepy story he wrote, too.
Now, anyway. Your children, what are they doing now?
My son is now 19, and he will be 19 on Halloween. He's a Halloween baby.
Oh, my gosh.
He's up at the Rochester Institute of Technology studying three-dimensional digital art and design and animation, which basically does all of the visual things for any computer stuff you'd have, from computer games to simulations. My daughter just got into the North Carolina School of Science and Math, which is a boarding school for 11th and 12th grade. She's 16, and she is studying theoretical physics, and she wants to be a quantum physicist.
Now, one of the things you were telling me is about how the English language and the use of the stories and everything has influenced and has made them better at what they do.
Right. They're both really, really, really excellent at communicating what they want to do and how they want to do it. They're both wonderful writers. They have gorgeous vocabularies, and they're very good at expressing themselves. My son has done storyboarding for video games. He also plays Dungeons and Dragons, and he's a DM. He's a story-based kind of guy. And so looking at animation and telling stories with images, he's very good at both words and images, and that has helped him a lot as he's gone through with this. And my daughter, as a scientist and really logical person, also has this incredibly beautiful lyrical side, and so that she's able to express quantum physics in a very lyrical, lovely way, as well as being someone who likes writing. And she's 16, she has written her first sci-fi novel.
Oh my gosh.
Right, she's pretty amazing.
So I guess we could say storytelling was an integral part of raising these children.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And when they were really small, I did episodal stories. Like, I'd be on the road, and I'd call in every night at 6, and each of them was doing a different one, and I would just make them up on the spot as I would talk to them. They'd listen for 5-10 minutes, and we'd say goodnight, and that was it.
Wow.
So...
And you've got to look back and be very proud.
Well,
of what you have there now, because spending that time.
Right. Well, that was spending the time was a choice. When my husband and I got married, one of the things that we agreed was that somebody had to be home the entire time, whether it was me or him. And for the first 6 years, I did it, and I was terrible at it. I was not a good stay-at-home mom. I don't have the patience for it. I mean, I like children, but not that much, apparently.
Right.
And so he quit his job and to stay home with the children, and I went back out to travel. So to keep track of them, to keep touch with them, I did a lot of storytelling with them when I was home and also when I was on the road. And we also read to each other. So it is not uncommon for us to be in the middle as a family of a long-form novel. And a few years ago, we were traveling across country, and my daughter was reading this book to the two of my husband and I, and my son started reading with her, and the two of them, they took on character roles and voices, so we have, like, reader's theater going on. And they went through, and now whenever they're reading books, they do reader's theater with us. It's just fun.
That is so cool.
It's fun.
That is really an accomplishment, I think, in today's world. And probably when you were doing it, you just thought, well, this is great.
This is what you do.
Right, exactly, right. Exactly. Little did you know it was a formula for success. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. We're here with Donna Washington. We'll be right back. Don't you go away.
Lay away. We've done it for over 30 years here at Sharp Facets Gallery. So whether it's Christmas, a birthday, an anniversary, or just because, we know lay away every day. Come see us today at Sharp Facets Gallery. Need more info? Call us 229-6613. That's 229-6613.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here with Donna Washington. She is a storyteller extraordinaire from kids to adults. She likes them all. She also does some interesting workshops. There's so many things that she does. You really have figured out how to make a success out of something that you love, and I think that's to be commended.
Well, thank you. I have had so much help. I got to say, you know, it's not like I was like, oh, let me go out there and climb some mountains all by myself. In the 70s, the storytelling movement got going again. And strangely enough, a lot of the tellers who were part of that movement lived right outside of Chicago. And I graduated from school, and they were all within arm's reach of me. And they are such a supportive community that I got out of school and I called Jim May, who is one of the elders in our community. And I was like, I'm a newly minted storyteller. Could I come to your festival? Sure, I'll give you an hour on the kids stage. An hour? I only know two stories. We'll learn a few more. We'll see you this weekend, right? So,
and you went and you succeeded.
And it was fine, right? So, and when I've had trouble in the past, I've been able to call anyone in our field and go, okay, I don't know how to do this, or what do you recommend? And people have been so kind. And so I really believe you got to pay it forward, right? So if someone calls me and is in a bind or confused or whatever, I am happy. I will stay on the phone with you as long as you need me to.
Wow.
If you want to talk about this in this business.
Wow.
So, so being part of that community and having so much help. So, you know, my work from workshops to writing books to telling, you know, if I could get on the phone now and call a friend and say, gosh, I need a story for XYZ, they'd say, I have one. Have you heard of this?
Right.
And they would give me a story to tell. So it's cool.
That's pretty awesome. Well, we wanted to get you to tell us a story this afternoon on the air. That's part of the fun of this. And I get to watch her, and we are recording this too. So we'll be doing a video of this too. So as she's dressed in her, she came in and she sat down and she said, I've got my t-shirt and my sweatshirt and I'm just sitting here in her wild hair. But she's very expressive. So go ahead. Tell us
all
your story, Donna Washington.
This is from Elvis in Lafayette, Georgia. There was an older man in his about his 70s going down the road. And as he went down the road, he heard a voice. It said, kiss me, kiss me, kiss me. He stopped and looked around. He did not see anyone. He got ready to walk on. He heard the voice again. I said, kiss me, kiss me, kiss me. He stopped again. He looked. And there, the only living thing near him was a frog. He picked it up. He looked around. He said, excuse me, did you say something? And the frog said, yes, I did. I said, kiss me. I was a beautiful young princess, and I was stolen by an evil old witch, and she turned me into this frog and kept me in a shoebox. But she passed away, and I got out, and as soon as you kiss me, I will turn into a beautiful young woman, and I will be very, very grateful. And he said, that's fascinating. And he walked with her, and he talked to that frog, and she talked to him all the way home. They got inside his house. He put her on the counter. He got on a shoebox and started punching holes in the top of the shoebox. And she said, what are you doing? Don't you want to kiss me? Don't you want a beautiful young princess who is very grateful? And he said, no offense, honey, but at my age, I'd rather have a talking frog.
Voila, yes. That's good. That's good. You know, we tell a lot of stories like that that are jokes.
Right.
You know, and that's one of those that kind of qualifies for a story slash joke.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you asked for a two-minute story. That's what you get.
That's all right. All right. Well, you know, you do, you also work with a company, Wink.
Wink. It's a group of writers, women's, usually women. There's a couple guys who have joined in the past, recently. And we all gather and we support each other. And WINC stands for Writers and Illustrators in North Carolina.
Okay.
And so the reason why we formed the company is because writers don't have a water cooler.
Yeah.
Right? We don't have any moment where we all gather somewhere and go, what are you doing? I don't know. What are you doing? We don't have that. So we have to create that ourselves. So WINC is our water cooler. It's where we get to come together and meet each other and talk about projects and buck each other up and go, yeah, I saw the reviews for that book, but I liked it.
And
that sort of thing.
Right. I understand. That's a good thing. We all need that type of thing.
Right.
Yes.
So it's called Writers and Illustrators of North Carolina. If you type it into your Google box, you can pop it up. There's some wonderful, wonderful writers over there, including Clay Carmichael,
mm-hmm.
who wrote a really, really, really wonderful award-winning book just recently, a couple years ago, maybe longer than a couple of years ago now that I think about it. And of course, is it coming to me what it is, what the book is? No.
No.
Of course not. Wild Things. It's called Wild Things.
Okay.
Fabulous, fabulous. Lulie Gray over there. Jackie Ogburn, who is also a well-respected award-winning author. Just really amazing pieces. So if you want to go to Writers and Illustrators in North Carolina, head over there and you can find some great books.
That's right. And then I just did want to touch on a little bit. Now, tomorrow at 10 o'clock, actually mm-hmm. earlier than that, but at 10 o'clock you're doing the public performance at Ware Shoals High School mm-hmm. in the high school gym there. Mm-hmm. And everybody is invited to come and hear stories. Now, what will you be doing? Just telling stories? Have you got anything else planned? Or are you just...
You know, we'll be doing... I always talk to the audience first, but I'm mostly doing 9th through 12th grade. So if adults come out, you'll get to hear some of the stories. I'm going to be doing a PG-13 version of a Chaucer tale.
Oh, my goodness.
And I do stress it's PG-13. Anything that happens beyond that's happening in your own imagination. Not my fault. and I probably will also be doing stories about... learning how to navigate through the world with another person. So relationship stories. No sex, as you said at the top of the show.
You know, relationships have comedians for
right.
years
mm-hmm.
have told stories
about
relationships. Yeah.
Right. And storytellers do the same because that's the essence of who we are, right? We are not individual animals. We are not like guinea pigs. You can't put us in a cage by ourselves and we're happy. We really need to be relating to each other. So,
kind of like the frog.
Right. Right. Stories are part of all of that. And I kind of think... You know, the world only happens in story form. There's no other way for us to approach it, right? It's all linked together, and it's not just random events. They're all connected, and they're all connected in you some kind of way. And that's the story of who you are.
Now, just out of curiosity, how does one learn to tell stories? Because just like jokes, there are people that can tell jokes, and then there are people that can't tell a joke worth a darn. How does somebody become a good, let's not even go for great, let's just go for a good storyteller?
Well, first of all, you have to have a certain amount of confidence, and you have to be willing to do it. Those are two things.
Right.
The next thing is you need to be more concerned about who's listening to you than you are about yourself.
Now, that's a hard one for a lot of people today.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's got to be more about your audience than it is about you. You tell the stories for the audience. You're not telling the stories for yourself. And you can usually tell a story. And what I try to tell people is if you do it right, you disappear. And the only thing they remember is the story. So last really quick, short explanation of what that means. I did a K through 5 set, which is not my favorite, kindergarten through 5th grade. That's too big a group of kids. And I'm in there, I'm doing my thing. And after it's over, I'm doing a big group of teachers. And one of them says, oh, I love the way you were running around the stage. I said, I didn't go anywhere. Yes, you did. We saw you. No, the microphone was in the middle of the stage. I didn't move. We saw you. They were really sure.
Wow.
That I had been running all over the stage, but I had been standing in one spot.
Wow. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. That is fascinating. That's when you have to say to yourself, wow, it was a good story. If you believe I was moving and I know my legs stood right here, that's terrific.
Yeah, it's a great job.
It's a great job. Well, I certainly hope that people come out and see you tomorrow morning out there at Ware Shoals High School at the gym and come out and see Donna Washington. You will be thoroughly entertained. This has been a fascinating hour for me, and I hope all our listeners out there, you do an excellent job, and I hope if you come back down this area, you'll come by and spend an hour talking with us on the radio again.
Anytime.
All right. This is great. Thank you so much, Donna Washington.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.